Hey, it's episode 425 of the 343 podcast. Today I have a guest. His name is Kirk Kinsey. He is a repeat guest. We had him on, I don't know how long ago, but he is a very seasoned practitioner here in the American soccer landscape, particularly in youth coaching, particularly in the Arizona area. And one thing occurred to me as I was preparing for my remarks that I was going to make right now, and that is there is a uniformity of all the issues across the country. You know, when we have guests and I sample from the East Coast, the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, anywhere in between, the issues are all the same. Yes, there's little variations here and there. Yes, there's little idiosyncrasies here and there, depending on where you happen to be working your craft. But there is a strong signal in the commonality that should lead one to understand and believe and accept and realize that there is a root cause. And we all suffer from the root cause. I'm going to let you listen to this one. There's a lot of gold nuggets from Kirk Kinsey in his youth soccer practitionership. Whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, whether you're a media member, whether you have any sort of touch point to soccer, this one's for you as well. Speaking of commonalities across the country from East Coast to West Coast, there also is a global commonality on how to develop players, how to develop coaches, how to develop teams, how to develop clubs. And that is with a particular coaching methodology that you can find at 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. And it's not like we compiled this commonality from books or articles or elsewhere and then put it all, synthesized it all, and put it on a website. No. This is us actually eating our own dog food for 20 years and doing unprecedented work here in the American soccer ecosystem. So again, I repeat, coaches, get on the proven path immediately. Otherwise, you're going to waste a whole year, two or three, or God knows how long until you circle back around and you're going to be like, man, I should have just joined. And that is at 343coaching.com. And parents, the same goes for you. You're not laying out cones, of course, but you are talking to your kids and you are watching games with your kids and you are doing things that impact your kids' soccer trajectory. Good and or bad. Hopefully more good than bad, but we're all human. We understand. And that's why we created 343masterclass.com just for you parents. Let's tilt the scales even further. 80% good, 20% bad, 90% good, 10% bad. Hell, we can't reach 100%, obviously, otherwise we're God, but we did the best we can in codifying our 20-plus years of coaching experience from 9-year-olds up through professional players. Yes, through professional players. We've seen cycle after cycle, and we codified it for you, parents, at 343masterclass.com. Last but certainly not least, which is what I always say, if you happen to be coaching in the unique 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode with Kirk Kinsey. Here we go. Look, I don't know where to start. I'll just say the following. So I opened up my X feed stupidly, and you know who this is, right? Because it's your franchise. It's Maximiliano Bretos, right?
Max. Oh, yeah. I did see what he said, yeah.
And I would love Pro Rel and MLS for a variety of reasons. Top of the list, no other American sports league has it. The commissioner is right, though. You have massive investment right now in teams, stadiums. You can't tell these owners, thanks, oh, but you might be playing in D2 next year. Breaking news, money for soccer here is not growing on trees. In due time. This is just stupendous ignorance from people who have been gifted a platform. And this is such a source of the problem, right? Is these guys who work, especially the guys who work for a franchise, peddling the propaganda, Kirk. So it's infuriating.
Yeah. You know, I really can't, again, when like I got involved with LAFC, it was like with this eye towards, I want to figure out like what is everybody thinking here? What are they trying to do? I want to meet these people. I want to talk to them. And it's been 8-9 years now, and I still don't know. Like, it's still just kind of like, oh, well, you can't do it. You can't open up the pyramid. You have to protect the owners for XYZ. And it's like dealing with a religious cult where once those conditions are met, it's like, oh, well, surprise. Now there's all these other conditions that we have to meet first. As inflammatory as that sounds, it's like the same sort of non-reasoning that they go through to get there. It's weird, man. It's weird.
It's so strange. And what I tell Benny and everybody I come across, they're able to get away with it because their primary customer that they're targeting are the non-soccer people, the non-soccer hardcores, the people who really don't know any better and are out there just for a good time and want some entertainment. And I get it. It's fine. It's just really annoying that they get, you know, what's that line in Breaking Bad from whatever his name is? He's like, they can't keep, he can't keep getting away with this.
Jesse, Walt,
They just keep getting away with it, man. And they keep moving the goalposts and everybody's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. Well, and I think that same sort of like targeting where they target people who just don't know any better and won't ever know any better is that same sort of like, it's the same way that youth clubs target soccer parents, because those are the customers that, like, you talk about it all the time. I think people finally understand that the parents in youth soccer are the customers and clubs have to target them. So like, what do they sell to these suburban parents? They sell, oh, we won this tournament and we had a team water balloon party and we did, like, look at this fun thing that we did, right? It's all nonsense. And even the pathway that they sell is messed up because it's all geared towards college, because the clubs know that the parents want their kid to go to college. They don't want them to go to an academy and eventually turn pro, because there's like something frightening. Well, if you don't go to college, then you're a failure, right? So it's really, they'll spend $30,000 over the course of 10 years from the time their kid is 8 to 18 chasing a division whatever scholarship, right? That they're probably also not going to get.
Yeah, it's interesting considering, I mean, if the people who I consider among the smartest in the world are right, that this trend of the usefulness of college is kind of coming to an end systematically, and more people are realizing that college isn't all we've been sold that it is, with respect to return on investment and getting a career afterwards and being able to buy a home afterwards and all, you know, the classic social contract that was made with everybody here. I'm curious if that's going to systematically impact what you mentioned, that the parents are looking for that college scholarship or acceptance into a college via the sport. And if they're not that interested in going to college anymore, because there's a certain degree of scamminess associated with getting a college education, whether that impacts the selling proposition of these youth clubs.
I think it will.
Not yet,
obviously. But I mean, everything's geared towards, I mean, look at the way that the Federation and everybody is kind of bowing down to ECNL right now, right? And as best as everybody understands it, that's the route to go to college, right? That's where all the college scouts apparently attend. We all know that's not necessarily true. We all know it, I guess, but like nobody says it out loud. It's another one of those like unspeakable truths that you can't say. Is it a good league? Yeah, it's a good league. It's a higher level than most in the US, but like everything's geared towards that. And they want birth year or school year registration. So the Federation just says, yeah, okay, fine. What you want. We don't care. And we're not going to enforce that on MLS because that's our other sacred cow that we can't upset. It's bizarre. I mean, hopefully they do start to see through it and start demanding a better product right now. But I honestly don't know how to get through to them on that level.
Yeah, we need a bigger platform, man. We need more of us speaking to everybody in our circles. But you sent me a message, Kirk, just for the audience sake here, as to what we might be discussing today. Maybe you can just kick us off if you care to talk about that, the whole mixed soccer thing. And then, you know, if you don't allow me to kind of frame it or set the stage, the way I view the discussion is most people, I tend to believe, reason a lot through analogy instead of from fundamental principles. Obviously, analogies are flawed. Thinking from first principles is the way to go, but most people don't really think that way. And so we're kind of left with little choice but to do the analogy. So I don't know, with that sort of framing, if you agree with it, maybe kick us off into this idea that you've been noodling over for what seems to be a long time.
Yeah, I mean, so the, you know, with the rise of MMA, 20, 25 years ago with the UFC, you started to see people realize that like certain martial arts weren't useful because there were all these Brazilians just choking people out. And there was a guy with a boxing glove in a ring that was just getting dominated, right? And then you started to see people who were actual, to use your terminology, they were actual practitioners, and they would go around to different karate schools or kung fu schools or whatever, and they would just destroy these masters on video. If they would agree to like actually fight them. And so it kind of exposed a lot of martial arts as just fake, right? And for the longest time, the more that I get involved in youth soccer over the past 10 to 15 years, the more I see everything as kind of that same way. It's a lot of fake development, fake pathways, fake whatever. And I don't exactly know what the way out of it is, to be honest, except to try and continue to expose it, try and do your best to like put a good product on the field and on tape for people to see. There's so many different motivations, like you talked about, where like parents want their kids to go to college, parents, clubs have to market to them, and you know, MLS wants more control over the entire ecosystem. So it's tough to break through and actually expose all these kind of like fake development pathways, where ultimately what happens is a kid, like I said, pays $20,000 to $30,000 over the course of 10 years and gets a high school letter. That like I kind of see like the high school varsity team now is like the Shotokan karate black belt, where it's like, is that kid actually gonna fight anybody? Can he? No, he can't fight anybody. Just like the other kid can't really play soccer. He can hang on a soccer field in high school, and everybody's like, yeah, I guess we did it. And like, good job, everybody. High fives all around. I don't know. It's a weird, it is kind of a weird analogy, but I think it's, I think there's a lot of overlap between the two.
Yeah. Would you, so to carry this a little bit further, you've been coaching for quite a while now. Over the course of years, have you been able to coach at higher and higher levels than where you started from? And where I'm going with this is it's very easy to fall into the trap, not just as a coach, but as a player and as a parent, as anybody who is playing the game or participating in the game, to fall into the trap of you're winning a bunch of games, you're scoring a lot of goals, you think you're good, right? And then all of a sudden you level up to the next higher tier of competition or whatever. And all of a sudden, maybe you do it again and you're like, oh, wow, we're really good. And then you level up again and all of a sudden you're getting smashed, right? And reality smacks you in the face. So I'm curious, because we've experienced that. If you've experienced that, and if you've seen parents / players get those sorts of reality checks.
Yeah. I started, as most people do, as a rec coach with my kids when my oldest was then, I think, 3 or 4. So this is, again, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago. And eventually he wanted to play club with some of his friends, and I didn't like the club in town. We've gone over this story before, you and I. And so we started at kind of like a grassroots club, right? And then we moved on. This past year, we were able to join an organization that allowed us to play on like what everybody would call a platform. We played in National League, which again, isn't the highest. It's not ECNL. It's not MLS Next, but it is a higher level. And it was a big wake-up call for a lot of the kids and their families in terms of how much travel there was, how intense the matches were, how hard the kids competed. First couple match days, we were out in San Diego, and it was like a different level of competition. It was almost like a different sport, where teams are no longer letting you just have your way with the ball. They're actually going to come try and win it from you, and they're going to foul you, and they're going to play physical, and they're going to cheat, and it's going to be a whole new thing.
Got it. No, because it's important to get those reality checks. Otherwise, you live in this delusion. The longer you live in the delusion, the less time you have to adjust and say, yeah, and be able to make the decision of like, oh crap, I need to change and get better, right? If you go into the delusion for 3 years, now it's too late if you get your reality check a little too late.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the big moments for the team this year was after we played a couple of those match days in Southern California. Again, we're in Flagstaff, Arizona, so kind of a small town, remote town in Arizona. We came back and played a couple tournaments at the same level that we had before, you know, like gold level tournaments. And the kids just kept saying, everything's slower. It's like everything is just moving in slow motion for us all of a sudden. So even the kids recognized it when they came back to the level that they had been at before, which is like, oh, dang, like we have definitely changed over the course of just 3 or 4 months.
No, it's fascinating, man. It's fascinating. I think you're aware when we started going to Mick Cup, maybe like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, to Spain and competing against Barcelona, Ajax, Inter, all those clubs. It was a certain thing back then. And now everybody here in the States kind of goes to Mick Cup, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
But it's still good in the sense that a lot of the American teams do get a reality check because they might have won a national championship, right? Or a state championship at, say, because I don't know how national league that you just mentioned is actually structured. I presume there are some regional type titles or state type titles or something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, they'll go thinking that they're equipped and capacitated, and that's what they have to do to get a reality check nowadays, because you can't be admitted to ECNL or you can't be admitted to MLS right. Next. You have no choice but to now go out of the country. People complain here about travel soccer is a scam, and why do kids who are 12 have to travel to, to San Diego from Flagstaff or something to get some competition? Well, you've got no choice. You got to do it, man.
Yeah. Specifically for us, it was which club and which competition is going to have us, right? And it has nothing to do with what we were doing in Arizona. It had everything to do with like this club had the platform and the leadership that was like, yeah, here's a good team. We're going to platform them. And so like that was kind of a stroke of luck on our part, where Playmaker was like, yeah, we'll let you guys do this. And we're excited to have you on board. But if that wasn't the case, we'd just be having to beg our way into something else or travel overseas, like you said, to go somewhere else to find new competition. So because it's just not, there's no, as you always say, there's no open ecosystem for us just to earn our way to the next thing.
Yeah. I don't know where you want to take this, but I think it feels like a good segue maybe into getting your perspective. And, you can be politically correct if you like. You can say whatever you like, obviously, about Landon Donovan's recent remarks around youth, because now we've just painted this picture for the first 10 minutes of our discussion about youth soccer and what it is that we have to do to get good games and what it is that motivates the parents and blah, 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 blah. And then here comes good old Landy Cakes and starts, pointing the finger at, well, Kirk, you're the part of the problem, or Gary, you are part of the problem. And all of this is, well, actually he didn't even say part of the problem. He kind of framed it as if we are the problem, not part of the problem. So any remarks you might have or reactions, it might make some sense for the audience to hear, because I don't want them to just hear it from me. They need to hear from a whole bunch of coaches. And I think a ton of coaches are like too timid or too scared or of potential repercussions if they speak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Landon set up that rhetorical trap, right? When he said, I go around and I talk to coaches and they think they know more about soccer than I do. And like, if I was to meet Landon, first of all, Clint Dempsey is my guy when it comes to U.S. soccer players. So I'll put my cards on the table. There's my bias right there. But if I was to sit down with Landon, I'm not going to think that I know more about the game than him. He played way longer than I did and has been involved with it for far longer than I have. But when it comes to me developing players where I am, I'm not going to just let him steamroll me and tell me what my kids need, because he's not doing it here. He's, as far as I can tell, not doing it at all. And so I don't know. It's a weird thing for him to set up that rhetorical trap, like, oh, these coaches are so stupid. They think they know more than I do, as if he is soccer God. I don't know. So that's a weird thing and a red flag for me right off the bat. Some of the stuff he said is, I kind of get it. You hear it a lot from grassroots coaches. Like, they just need a million touches. All these kids just need a million touches, and they don't need to be learning to build out of the back because you can do that when you're 21. And I agree, kids need to just play with the ball. And that's like very much in line with like families need to have a soccer culture at home from an early age. Kids need to be training on their own. They need to love the grind, kind of like Kobe. Whenever you listen to Kobe talk about his training regimen, it's like that's what he loved. He didn't even like the games were one thing, but the training is what he really loved. And so, yeah, kids need a million touches. Absolutely. But the idea that kids are going to learn to build out of the back at age 21 because it's super simple, I think is a weird mischaracterization of what positional play is or what Barcelona did or what Man City's doing now. I don't know. It seems to betray any understanding of what possession soccer actually is.
Yeah, it's a curious thing if we pulled on that thread a little bit more, and you touched on it when you said Barcelona or Man City or any number of players, teams, PSG or Argentina or whatever, all the high-level stuff. There's a reason why all those managers that believe in that way of playing get rid of players, you know, and bring in players very specific to being capable of doing that. Right. So it's clear that not just any player can just say, oh, build out of the back. Oh, okay. I'm going to go in there and just execute building out of the back. There's so much nuance and so much depth and richness and complexity associated with it. It looks so trivial on TV, but it's not trivial.
It does.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not trivial. And it's also potentially telling. Potentially being a key word here, that Landon is American, raised here in the United States, played youth soccer here in the United States, played professionally for 90% of his career here in the United States under American coaches throughout everything. And here in the U.S., we never believed in that sort of stuff. We were more the progeny of England. We were more like, oh, the goals over there, we have to score goals. Route one, go, you know, what's this building out of back nonsense, you know? And they even denigrated prime Barcelona or denigrated prime Spain, you know, this is so dumb, so boring. So how would somebody who was never trained in it really or appreciated it deeply understand its complexities and nuance? So it's no mystery to me anyway, my opinion, that the guy says, oh, you don't have to do that stuff at age 21. You can just tell them to do it and they'll just do it.
Right. Yeah. It betrays any sort of understanding of what it takes to do it at the professional level or to train it into young kids. There's a really telling part of those interviews where he says, you could just set up a simple drill where somebody passes you the ball, you take it with your right foot and you pass it into the corner. Like it's a bizarre, like he doesn't give a whole lot of detail, but clearly what he's saying is you could just pass it to a right center back and then they pass it into a corner is what he says. I assume like a pug out where a fullback would be standing. And so like Landon seems to think that all you need to do this, to play this way is learn how to receive with your right, pass with your left to the right-hand side of the field accurately. And like that, you put that kid could do a million reps like that, like he's asking for. And then when he's under a little bit of pressure or somebody takes away that right fullback that he's supposedly passing to, that's going to disappear. And all of a sudden he doesn't know what to do because he's not comfortable on the ball. And he's never actually played a line breaking pass. He's never actually given it back to the keeper and gotten open again. And so it really is this bizarre oversimplification that Landon uses to denigrate coaches who are trying to build out of the back. And I mean, there's plenty to be said about coaches who do it poorly, but I don't know, to even just go after them for attempting it is really bizarre to me.
It's very weird. I think also to be charitable to him, maybe he's trying to link it with the players need to be just enjoying themselves, having a good time, getting a bunch of touches on the ball. We shouldn't be doing this tactical sort of stuff at young ages. So if I'm being charitable, right?
Sure. Jim,
but linked to that, He actually also said that he's kind of making this whole youth soccer thing like one of his primary missions or his primary mission now. And he admittedly said, because of his experience, recent experience with his own kids, right? So it's really interesting to me that you only start opening your eyes to perceiving what you believe are problems when it hits home to you.
Yeah.
Until it hits home and it doesn't directly impact you one way or another, your opinion of it impacting you, do you not start opening your eyes and trying to investigate? And he's just now starting to investigate. You don't get something happen to you and you immediately know the solution or the problem even. You start investigating it.
I think it's a really good point.
If I can finish my thought on that is, he's never been personally, as far as I can tell, impacted in a negative way, let alone a very negative way, by Major League Soccer or this whole establishment that exists. He has actually, in my estimation, benefited greatly by the existing establishment, the existing order. So he doesn't see the problems of the establishment or the problem that is the monopoly. From his vantage point, it's like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely the other golden child. So it's going to take a lot of reprogramming when and if you do get him in a room to help him see like all the downstream negative effects that come from MLS. And what you said about it, it kind of takes your kids or yourself being impacted by it to really start to say, oh, like, dang, these guys are really capping what I can go accomplish. They're in my way right now of getting things done. And I think the instinct to be charitable to him is a good one, because I think he really is just saying, like, just get the kids' touches on the ball. Like, it's I have a good friend here in town who is a PE coach. He played in college. We've been playing together for a long time, ever since we've both lived in this town. And he will tell you over and over and over again, I'm just not really interested in club soccer. He's smart about the game. He's smart about development. He's like, I just want to do grassroots stuff. And so he's kind of in this mold of like, I'm going to run something and it's all going to be just recreational. And it's all going to be focused on the kid and the ball, no matter where they are. And so I think what he's describing is like the very bottom of the pyramid that you want, where you want a lot of kids getting a lot of touches and playing a lot of soccer and having a lot of fun. And then once you start moving up that ladder, things start to get more serious and I guess focused.
Yeah. Another idea I've been noodling over, I'd like to see what you think of it, is something really weird happens in our society. And it's global, but here in the United States, where we're at in particular, where like a professional athlete, okay, and I'll keep it to soccer, a professional soccer player, you know, you become famous, you're revered, right? Oh, wow, you're a pro athlete, all these sorts of things. And as a consequence of that, it's like there's a spell put on the general public that makes the public generally believe that, well, if they're a professional athlete, then they must know everything associated with the sport that they're involved in, because they were the best at, you know, being that in that sport. And it's very strange. I say it's very strange because if you look at any other domain, any other profession that's not highly revered or not, you know, you don't become famous, you don't get that sort of treatment from everybody.
Right. Right.
And everybody acknowledges, I would say, that, yeah, well, just because you're a Starbucks barista, and you've been a Starbucks barista for 20 bloody years, does not mean that you know everything about coffee and the technology associated with coffee and the development of beans and the origin, just everything, right? Just because you were a barista for 20 years. If for some reason our society, they were the most revered profession in the country as being a coffee barista, you know what? Everybody would believe that the coffee barista knows everything about coffee. So I don't know if the analogy, again, they're all flawed, but kind of makes sense. I've been toying with this idea of just because their profession happens to make you famous, everybody believes that you know everything about the ecosystem.
Right. So I think the famous bit is what probably lends them so much authority. I think people tend to give authority to celebrity, right? So Landon is famous. He played for a long time, right? He's not the best American to have ever played, but he's got this fame associated with him. So like a lot of people will just like default to the authority there. And to me, it's really uninteresting to do that. I think people that like the smartest people that you know will tell you, I'm really good at this one thing. I think we've talked about this before. The best doctors will be like, well, I'm an oncologist. So I know a lot about this specific type of cancer, but like, I don't know about orthopedic surgery. That's just not my area. And like, so there's like a humility to people where it like lends, it allows me to trust them a little bit more than somebody who's just a celebrity and talking. I don't know.
No. Okay. So yeah, it's just such a strange thing because again, I always say the same thing because I think it hits home because everybody was a student in their past. We all were students, high school, elementary school, some of college or whatever. Nobody in their right mind would ascribe to that student authority over the education system, authority over right. knowing how to teach yeah. or what to teach or like nobody, everybody, because we all have experience with that. But yet when it comes to this, like, oh, Landon said this, so that's, this must, I have to give it so much credence.
I think you can apply that to youth soccer as well. Most of the coaches that you know just played youth club soccer too. And that was like the end of their development with the game. I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about like, that was the end of their engagement with the game. They never watched professional soccer because it's not something we do in this country. And they started coaching because they played for a while, right? It's like the people who really enjoy school go on to become teachers. But like, what about them is actually, what about them is useful in that profession? And so I think it's the same thing. Like people just, they turned 18 or 19 and they aged out of youth soccer. So now they're still involved with youth soccer, but as a coach. And they never think like, well, I got to figure out this game a little bit better. I got to figure out how to actually develop players rather than just, well, we played Sharks and Minnows. So I'm going to play Sharks and Minnows with my 12-year-olds. I've never seen 12-year-olds doing that, but you know what I'm saying. We did this finishing drill where you pass to the coach and the coach lays it off around the penalty spot and I run it and finish. And it's like, all right, well, I guess we're training now.
Yeah, the other thing that I've been noodling with is even more fundamental as to why we have this situation. I tend to believe we as humans just don't want to realize or admit to ourselves or even consider that we're going through this world not knowing anything. We want to believe that we can wrap our head around whatever we choose to wrap our head around, and that the way that we do that is by, oh, well, look, I'll just pick this authority here and then listen to what they have to say or read what they wrote, and I can become very competent in the subject matter.
Right.
Nobody wants to believe that, no, actually, you can do all of that and some, and you still don't know a goddamn thing about the subject matter.
Yeah.
No, but nobody wants to believe it, you know? So they live in this world where it's like, Gary, how on earth can you say that Landon doesn't know what he's talking about? That because them admitting that maybe Landon doesn't know what the hell he's talking about crushes that fundamental mental model that they have. Well, if that's broken, I can't trust anybody. I can't trust any institution. And so I'm completely lost in life.
Right. That's back to that first principles thinking, right? Where like you've made some faulty assumptions, you've got some bad software running, and now you're confronted with what seems to be an alternate reality, and you experience all this cognitive dissonance. You don't know what to do with it, right? There's a really good example of this. I know how you feel about reading soccer books. But a couple years ago, I read one of the biographies about Thomas Tuchel, and it was fine, you know, fine read. But there's like 3 or 4 pages where he reflects on watching Barcelona play for the first time. And he has this moment where he realizes, why are all these idiots receiving the ball with their back foot? Like, what is this thing that they're doing? Like, he realized that they all universally did it and didn't quite understand why. And it leads him to investigate more. And it's like, this is after he had already played professionally and been coaching in both the youth and the professional levels for years. And then he encountered this thing that kind of blew his mind. And that for me was a signal, like, whatever I think I am as a soccer mind, as a soccer coach, like, I'm not what Tuchel was when he had this realization, this like earth-shattering realization, like, oh, I don't know anything, right? And then he went and incorporated it into his own thing. And so again, that humility of being able to admit, like, I just don't know about this thing, or I need to learn more. I think that's a good indicator of somebody that you can trust. Again, they'll be honest about their own shortcomings.
Yeah. Just reminded me of Luis Enrique also inventing, you know, off the kickoff, kick it out of bounds way up there. And everybody's like, what on earth is this? And there's still people saying, like, what is this? What are you doing?
Right.
There's a lot of logic associated with doing that. Like,
sure.
Nobody for 100 years thought of doing that.
Now you see it in youth games all the time. And I think actually the youth game is a great place to do it because nobody can build. So pin them deep and see if you can create some chaos with some pressure. I don't know. I love when somebody comes up with something novel and kind of like challenges, but what everybody assumed was the truth for forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Okay. I can keep on going with this stuff, but I feel like we're exhausting the whole Landon Donovan thing.
It just really
irks me to no end, because they have a platform, and instead of, in my estimation, helping things get better, they're actually reinforcing the things that are bad, even though they don't know that that's what's actually happening and that's what they're actually doing. Again, in my estimation.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of examples of this too, where it's not just one pundit. I think there's like vestiges of old things in the US that kind of harm development still. I think ODP is one of those. I don't know what it's like in other states. Here in Arizona, it's kind of laughable. It's super political. But everybody takes their cues from ODP. Like, all their player profiles, their style of play, everybody kind of builds programs to match them. I had a rival club call me a couple months ago and ask if I was interested in coming over. And we started talking about, what's the philosophy going to be? And I told him, I was like, it doesn't have to be positional play. That's my thing. That's what I like the most. But like, if you tell me that we're going to be the best 4-4-2 bunker and counter team out there, and like, that's what you really want to do, then like, that's what I'll build for you. If you hire me, that's fine. And they immediately went into, well, ODP wants us to play a 4-3-3. That's what everybody has to be comfortable with to make the team. Your six has to be a destroyer, your eights have to do this. And I was like, that's a way that I don't want to play, and I'm definitely not going to do it so just to bow down to ODP. Like, you can send a kid to the Olympic development program, and then what are they going to get out of that? They're going to pay more money, they're going to travel more, and ultimately nobody's ever going to sniff them. Like, it's going to go nowhere. So why are you aligning your program with this thing? So Landon can say one thing, right? ODP can say another. MLS can say, this is what we want. And I don't know, this brings us right back to, there's no independent clubs. There's no, everybody just follows whatever marching orders are given down from the top.
Yeah, no, it always comes down to that, doesn't it? I'm not done with Landon.
Bring it back. Let's do it.
It's just a curious thing, because if somebody were to say, Gary, come on, Landon knows way more than you do. Even if that were true, why do you take whatever he says as correct? Because if you look at other professional soccer players who have played World Cups, who have been, you know, had even better careers than Landon, or comparable careers, or just pro players, they'll say the exact opposite to what Landon says. They all have their own opinions that oppose one another. So if you have all these guys who were former professional players disagreeing about all of these sorts of things, then that should be a signal to you that whatever Landon's saying, you shouldn't take as like, oh yeah, Landon is correct.
Yeah. It's another guy with a microphone, right? Like the ideas have to be sound on their own. You can't just appeal to authority and be done, because there's a million different authorities and they all disagree with each other. Again, like first principle ticket. It's
hard.
That can bring us back to college, where nobody learns that stuff anymore, right?
Yeah, no, it's very hard to do first principles, for sure. It's very hard to know what a first principle actually is.
Right.
Can you share a little bit? And look, if it's a sensitive thing, that's fine, and we can do what we need to do, about the kid that, you know, got invited to Mexico.
I'd love to.
I think it would be a good story for people to hear that, you know, good things can happen. You just have to keep working, and it's a new regime. That can be introduced to you, and it's a whole new learning curve now too.
Yeah. So we, in a National League game a couple weeks ago, as probably about a month ago now, game was going fine. I think we were up 1-0 at the time, and some guy in a white polo that says FC Juarez on it comes up to me and he's like, hey, in Spanish, you just assumed I spoke Spanish, which, like, lucky for, like, good guess, dude. And he's like, what can you tell me about number six there? And I was like, oh, Liam, he's a great player. He's half Mexican. He used to live in Mexico. And you see his ears kind of perk up. He's like, oh, he can go live in Mexico right now. I was like, yeah, I mean, his family used to live there. And he's like asking more and more questions. So he's left footed. And you play him as, he said five, right? You play him as a five. And yeah, I like him in the midfield. He's like, can you play as a center back? And I like him at holding mid. I love the rhythm that he plays with. And I was like, just watch him. And you'd see him collect the ball, send it out, get it back, get open, move it, and just pick the right moment to get forward. And ultimately what happened with him is at the end of the game, he asked to speak to his parents, and his parents came over and they offered him a spot, not just to come visit, but they offered him a spot for their 2012s down at FC Juarez in the residential academy. So the family's kind of worked out these details, and they're going down in 2 weeks to try it on for a month and see if it's going to be a fit for them long term. I guess this is the first time we've had a professional academy come after one of our players. We've had a couple colleges call us or, you know, approach us on the field. This is the first time a professional academy came and said, no, this is exactly what we're looking for. He's better than what we have now. We want him. But the exciting thing for me, this kind of goes back to the ODP discussion with the rival club, is we have consciously developed players that don't play just as destroyers at holding mid, right? We want kids who are cerebral, who understand the rhythm and how to play in each phase of the game. And the scout picked up on it immediately. So also for me, it's kind of like, oh, this is a kindred spirit with me, right? He sees the game like I do. He likes this kid for the same reasons I like him. And so it was like a validation, not only for Liam, the kid, but for me, for his parents, for having chosen the right club, for, you know, all the work that we've done. And like, we're a 3-4-3 club. So like, it's validation for you, even, I would say, where like the program puts out what people want, but you're probably going to have to go internationally to find those opportunities, unfortunately, because Americans don't want it. Americans want a destroyer six, right? We're kind of torturing that. I'm kind of torturing, I should say, that specific position, but I think it's the most illustrative when it comes to like the difference in how other countries see that position compared to the US.
I agree. It's the six is like the linchpin. If you want to play a possession-based game, you have to have a six with these sorts of qualities. Otherwise, it all goes downhill, which is kind of like the source of my original tweet 4 or 5 years ago regarding, or 6 years ago at this point, I think. Yeah, 6 years ago regarding Weston McKennie, you know, when I basically tweeted out, hey, if you want a possession-based team such as what Greg Berhalter was verbally advocating for and what everybody was clamoring for, you cannot have this guy, Weston McKennie, be the linchpin there as the six or the eight. You know, you need a completely different player profile. And of course, everybody takes that tweet still regularly to this day out of context. Oh, you the guy who said that Weston McKennie sucks? No, I didn't say he sucks. I said that he does not fit that particular role. But yeah, here in the United States, they still don't appreciate that role, unfortunately. And it's, I don't know if it's ever going to change, unless the whole ecosystem gets open, as we always say, outside of limited outlier pockets where there's a coach like yourself or coach such as Brian, or at the pro level, maybe you get a foreigner in there who sees the game the same way. It's just, or Pochettino comes in, you know, but I think Pochettino came in way too late in the cycle and the player pool was already shaped and formed and there's nothing you can really do about it. So you're kind of stuck, you know, with the players that you got. But good for the kid, dude. I hope, I don't know. I hope it works out. And I don't know, even if he doesn't stay there, I think it's probably still really good for him and his family to kind of give them that spike of energy and confidence and belief to propel them even further.
Yeah, you could. One of the funny things about it, Gary, is that after the game, you know, parents are asking, like, who is that guy? What is Liam really going to Mexico? What's going on here? And some of the kids and some of the parents, even my own wife was like, they wanted Liam? What about,
oh man,
you know, I'm not going to use their names. What about this kid who scored the goals? Or what about this kid who was really good on the dribble? And it's like, man, I still have so much heavy lifting to do to like get through to you guys on what these teams want for these positions. Like, it's the old, what's the Busquets line? If you watch the game, you don't see Busquets, but if you watch Busquets, you see the, what is it? I don't remember how it goes.
Like, I think that's it.
This idea that like these, like you still don't, they still don't get it. Unfortunately, it falls on me to like continue to help them see it. And I wish it wasn't so nebulous as that, but like, it's one of those things that once you see it, you can't unsee it. I think you and Benny talked about football being ruined for you. I have a couple coaches that have been with me for a few years and they tell me frequently, like, I cannot watch professional soccer anymore because of what you did to me. It's like, I didn't do it to you. I just turned you onto this thing. And like, you did that to yourself, but I'm glad you see it now.
God, I was going to say something that I thought was pretty good and I forgot all about it.
Much steamroll you.
No, sometimes I struggle because I care more about listening to the other person. And so that's why sometimes you'll just see me write something down here so I don't forget, because I want to listen and it's gone. It's freaking gone. Oh no, I remember now. Just an anecdote of many, many, many anecdotes that we've had about that position and what's valued here and what's not valued here. And it's a name that everybody understands is Efrain Alvarez, who played with us since he was 8 years old, you know, and then he graduated from youth, from Brian's work at age 16, 17, you know, and started playing for the Galaxy, but didn't really play all that much and wasn't really valued all that much. And it was just like kind of lingering around, you know, the bench or lingering around. And when he would get on the field, the team was not structured around that way of playing, so you're kind of screwed even if you are thrown on the field. And lo and behold, he goes to Chivas Guadalajara, who is in first place now, and he is the number 10 on Chivas and is the guy, the man. So they built the whole thing around him, so it's just a huge, you know, prism to look at this thing through. And in Mexico, you know, you have it's an Argentinian coach, Milito, who actually played in Barcelona during prime Barcelona years. So the guy understands, right? This is like, Efra is the guy. So much of it depends on who is your coach, what club are you at, all the other external factors that you don't control as to whether you actually make it as a pro or don't make it as a pro. And if we're not even talking about pro, whether you make it as a college player, don't make it as a college player, whether you make it as a youth player, you don't make it as a youth player. All the other things matter. Yes, you have to be good to a certain threshold level, of course. But you reminded me when the Juarez guy picked out Liam and everybody's like, what? Like, what really? Like, what about all these other guys?
Yeah. There's a couple things that I think are relevant here. And like zeroing in on the Efra conversation, why didn't it work for him at Galaxy? Well, because Galaxy wasn't equipped. They weren't trying to play that way, right? Maybe he wasn't ready. That could certainly be it. Like, I don't know the kid. But now it's working. once you got to the right environment, right? And so for me, that again, that brings it back to no open ecosystem, and coaches are forced, you know, Brian is forced to, he has to go to Chivas and then Galaxy or wherever, you know, whatever level will take him. And so that's where his kids go. But that doesn't mean the LA Galaxy are going to appreciate the what Brian actually did with those kids or the way that they actually play. And so players have to go seek out these opportunities. But in a closed ecosystem, it's near impossible. If Liam wanted to go, like, let's say he belongs to RSL professionally in the U.S., right? Because this is RSL land. Let's say, I don't know, I don't even know which team would value something like this, if I'm being totally honest. But I, for the sake of argument, let's just say New York City came and was like, hey, we like this kid. Do you guys have $100,000 in general allocation money that we can borrow to pay RSL so we can sign this kid? Like, just right there, there's a hurdle in the way, right? It's not just, you can't just sign with anybody. And that's really frustrating to me, that like somebody owns the rights to these kids locally and they essentially have to leave the country to escape it. This is something you know super well, but yeah.
It's insane. And we need to keep repeating it for the audience for the same reasons of our last podcast episode, is our audience needs to learn these things, and repetition is the only way that they're going to learn it. And then they have to spread it to their circles and on and on and on.
Right. Right.
It's crazy because even if you do leave Kirk, you can't come back and go wherever you want.
Yeah.
If you wanted to come back and you know, and to MLS or whatever, no, just because you lived in RSL's territory, RSL has your rights. What?
Yeah.
Guys, can we wake up? Like, what kind of, what is this? I forget the legal term, but it's not a good thing.
Yeah. I definitely don't know the legal term. Did you see? So right before we hopped on, I also checked Twitter. I saw something different fed to me, which was that MLS was looking at moving their MLS Next Pro, which is like their second teams. They're looking at sending second teams into quote unquote new markets, not towns, not whatever, new markets. So presumably LAFC would send somebody to, I don't know, San Bernardino, maybe, or maybe it'd be all the way to Phoenix, right? And what is the ultimate goal there? It's just them owning more of the pie, and we're going to cannibalize whatever's already there, and we're going to get it into our system that much earlier, and we're going to hoover up all the talent and then ultimately do nothing with it. But
yeah, they're evolving their cancerous model from, oh, look, San Diego Loyal proved that San Diego is a great market. So we're just going to now helicopter in a franchise there and destroy them. Oh, look. Yeah. Austin Bold, you know, there seems to be some sort of market there developing. There's some sort of interest, you know, it's a good town. Let's just helicopter in a franchise and destroy that USL club. Oh, look, Seattle, amazing. Let's just slurp them up into MLS ourselves. Oh, look, Portland, you know, and on it's predatory, it's cancerous. And now this is that the next phase, because there's only so many first division MLS franchises that they can helicopter into USL markets and destroy the USL. Now they're going to use their second teams to just parachute them in to USL markets and, you know, hopefully destroy USL that way. It's so blatantly obvious.
It's very transparent. Yet,
and yet we don't have journalists, reporters who are supposed to be chartered with doing this sort of work, saying a peep about what actually is the motive behind all of it.
Yeah.
They actually craft narratives saying this is great for soccer. It's going to grow soccer with more market. Guys, Kirk, let me ask you a question. Do these media guys, the journalists and reporters, do they actually know what's going on? Or do they sincerely believe the monopoly narrative? And that's why they report the monopoly narrative.
I think there's both. I think there's a lot of well-meaning people that get involved and they're smaller. They love the sport. They, you know, feel like growing it locally, quote unquote, locally is the right thing to do. And they just, that's kind of the end of the analysis there. And, you know, they do their job, they cover a beat and that's it. And so there's never any more thought to it. I do think there are people who carry a lot more water for the league. And I'll tell you the narrative they're going to use right now Like it writes itself and it's going to be parroted out nonstop is, well, this is going to give more access to MLS academies than has ever happened before. Imagine the kid in Bakersfield now doesn't have to drive all the way down to LA to train with his team, right? That's exactly what they're going to say. And there's going to be no mention of the fact that they're going to cannibalize some team in Bakersfield or, you know, put all the independent clubs out of business. And to be fair, I don't know anything about the clubs in Bakersfield. They could all suck. They could all just be taking cues from ODP too. So, but like MLS is just going to say, nah, this is ours now. And the Federation is going to sit back and be like, yep, it is yours. Have at it.
I get so mad.
It's hard not to, man. It's hard because it's like, it's hard. Again, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's over. There's no going back in. And all like you really can't see it any other way. What do you make of the Vancouver situation, Gary?
Yeah, well, what I posted, I think is very important. I think generally it's very important for us to be speaking about things accurately, and the language that we all use program us. And everybody is using the language that is incorrect and plays into the monopoly and the centralization of power to the monopoly and the belief that this is actually legitimate soccer competition. So when they say something like, oh, the Vancouver Whitecaps are going to move to Las Vegas. What are we talking? There is no moving. There's no moving. What do we mean we're moving from Vancouver to Las Vegas? Guys, they're just shutting down the office in Vancouver for whatever reason. And they're going to open up a new office somewhere else, let's say in Las Vegas. And by the way, it's not that. Here's another problem. Oh, the owner of the Whitecaps is going to sell the Whitecaps, right? And to somebody else who's going to buy the Whitecaps. All of that is incorrect. The quote unquote owner of the Whitecaps does not own the Whitecaps. They own equity in MLS LLC. They own equity in the single entity. I don't know how much equity. If there's 30 MLS teams, it's not 1/30th of MLS because everybody goes in on a different sort of deal. Maybe they own 1/60th of MLS equity. And that is what's up for sale. The guy is like, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. Presumably, because this could also all be a ploy to get taxpayer money from Vancouver to build a stadium and to do all these things to enrich the MLS billionaires, right? So it could be an extortion ploy because we've known this song and dance from the other major league sports in our country over its history. They hold a city hostage and extort them for taxpayer money.
But they did it to Columbus seven or eight years ago.
Yeah. But presuming the guy wants out, what's actually accurate is he's looking to sell his equity in MLS.
Yeah.
And somebody else is going to buy the equity in MLS. And along with that purchase, that other person, you know, gets operating rights to a franchise. And so that other person will then be able to say, okay, I'm going to open up an office in Las Vegas or wherever. Yeah. So it's not like if people need any more evidence, they write it in the articles themselves and they don't even realize it, that they literally say MLS is shopping the Whitecaps around. Like MLS is the one who chooses what gets purchased and what gets sold. So the owner of the Whitecaps doesn't own the Whitecaps. If you own something, if I own this laptop, I get to decide who to sell it to, how much, when.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The whoever owns the Whitecaps doesn't have that liberty because they actually don't own the Whitecaps.
No, and it seems like they're being forced out. If the reports are true that like a committee of owners, again, league owners it's the quote unquote owner of Atlanta and the quote unquote owner of LAFC and whoever's on this committee. And they're like, no, this guy's got to go. Right. And so we're just going to force him to sell it. We're voting him off the island. And yeah, the highest bidder gets the next franchise. And if it's Vegas, then it sucks to be you, Las Vegas Lights. It sucks to be you. Whatever other Las Vegas, is it Rush out there? I can't remember the big club. Vegas United is one of them, right? Full of youth clubs that are probably going to get swallowed up into whatever youth system they bring and just force on everybody from the top down. And again, this is like just because you play for RSL, the RSL youth setup in Tucson, Arizona doesn't mean that you're ever going to play for RSL. In fact, it means you will never play for them, but you're going to pay them a lot of money along the way. And it'll be the same in Vegas. It'll be the same with the MLS Next Pro teams that end up in Bakersfield or for some reason, I've really zeroed in on Bakersfield here. But it could be Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Colorado could own them, right? Who knows?
Anyway. No, so I don't know. I can rant about this stuff forever. I just wish we could kind of, I don't know, open our eyes a little bit more than we have them open. But admittedly, it took you a long time to start seeing things, right?
Once I got involved with the club side with my kids, so probably 3 or 4 years as a coach and like starting to learn the like more nuanced game and then encountering the politics, that's when it really just opened up. And it was like, oh man, this is all bad. Like something has to change. I feel powerless to change it myself. So I'm just going to focus on my thing here right now and try and fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you maybe end with the following? Because I'm curious about it. Maybe you don't think it's worthwhile, but I actually am curious. What's the update with the whole LAFC media thing? And maybe you can give me or us a little bit of a background as to what happened. You know, what was it, 6 months ago or something that order? What the hell happened? You have a friend or a partner in the podcast and you guys cover LAFC and just take it from there.
Yeah. So this is right around the time of the Club World Cup last year. For some reason, LAFC gave my co-host, his name is Daniel, a press pass. We've never claimed to be actual journalists or part of the press. Like we have always, like we run a fan podcast and we kind of do it. There is like an editorial decision on our part to like, we like this team enough. We're covering them. We watch the games with our kids. We go to games with our kids. But like, we do not agree with the direction of the league, and any opportunity we have, we're going to point that out. We're going to point out like the failings of MLS and LAFC when they're part of it. So Daniel got this pass. He started going to press conferences with Steve Cherundolo. And there were a couple points last year where LAFC were like, things were pretty bleak for them and like bad results. They looked completely clueless on the field. And Daniel asked what is like the most boilerplate question that you could ever ask a coach, which is, hey, do you have a message for the supporters on like what to expect in the Club World Cup or like what's to come, how we're going to get out of this? And Steve looked at him and he said, no. And he was like visibly upset. And the press conference ended pretty abruptly after that because Steve was like so put out by this question. Like, how dare you question me, right? Daniel got a text immediately after from the LAFC PR director, a guy named Seth Burton, and was like, hey, I need to talk to you. I can't remember all the details of the text, but like, can you help me understand where you got your pass and whatever, as if he had just slipped through the cracks and shouldn't have been there and whatever. And so Daniel reached out to him and they pulled his press pass. And that's when we were like, okay, we got these guys now. Like, you invited him in, you knew what we were, and like, why are you guys doing this? So Daniel reached out to him. They had this long conversation about how much we actually hate the team, hate the league, shouldn't bother covering the team, and just kind of like this whole song and dance about how unfair we are to them for ever questioning Steve or John Thorrington or anybody. And so they pulled his press pass and we just took it public. We were like, we're done. We're not playing this game. We took it public. And it kind of turned into this big fiasco where it was like people were really shocked that they had done this to him. And again, our whole thing was like, you guys invited us in and you already knew what we were. So like the fact that you took it from us doesn't really matter. But the fact that like you're trying to control our editorial slant to get it back is like what's offensive to us, right? We got texts from other people, high ranking officials in at LAFC, like saying, you guys are the only show that we actually listen to. You're the only one we can listen to that we can stomach because we just don't, like, we're not going to play all those games and play nice. Like, it's just not, why talk about it if all we're going to do is, you know, shake the pom-poms. Ultimately, Seth got fired from LAFC. So here we are. And to quote Breaking Bad again, I win, right? or I won, I think Walter says to Skyler. But yeah. Kind of a weird ordeal. We found out that Seth had like burner accounts on Reddit where he was like torching us as a show and personally. which is also funny.
No, the burner accounts are everywhere, for sure. For sure, from all these people.
Yeah.
Which brings us to a current event of today, right? Of Don Garber having responded to,
right,
what is it, the mayor of Vancouver or something like that, mm-hmm, you know, and calling him a liar or something. And
yeah.
And I guess he deleted it. And then he's like, oh, my account was hacked. But the guy literally, it got deleted within a minute or something. Like, how the hell did you recover your account within a minute to delete?
Yeah.
What this hacker did to you.
Oh, it is funny.
Incredible. Incredible. So even somebody like that, who you would think is above it, right? Because, hey, you're a wealthy man, you're the commissioner of a major league sport, you know?
Right.
And
right.
It still gets to you, and you have to go on Twitter to say, liar, liar, pants on fire, you know, and be a child.
This is so unfair. How could you do this to me? Yeah.
Wow.
Bizarre.
Yeah. So, all right, man. Any other thoughts or questions or ideas or burning desires to get out?
No, I mean, I think so. Right now is tryout season. And my message to all the parents is please, please break free of whatever spell the bad club has on you. Like if you want your kid to actually go somewhere and do something worthwhile in this sport, get away from the, I just want to play with my friends. We won this tournament again, so you should really come back next year. Evaluate what you're seeing on the field with clear eyes. And again, Gary says it all the time, like, watch the video. Pull up their Instagram page. And this goes back to the mixed soccer thing. They all sell the same thing. They all sell, here's a tournament we won, here's a party we had. None of them will ever have video. Every once in a while, a club will have like an announcement of a girl that they got to like a college. There are never boys going to colleges or professional academies. Never, ever. It's quite shocking. So just evaluate your club with clear eyes and be honest with yourself. If your kid wants to play with his friends, great. Let him play with his friends and realize like that's probably where it's going to end up. But if you think that because you're at an ECNL club now that your kid's going pro, like you really need to evaluate it a little more closely.
Give everybody your handles, your social media accounts and everything where they can learn more.
Yeah. So you can follow me at Kirk Kinsey on X. The one that I would love for everybody to follow is playmaker.footballacademy.north, which is our club. And I would love, we're trying to grow that handle. We're trying to show that like you can put good video and good content out there. We have kids teaching techniques, little tutorials and stuff. Like if you could do me a solid and follow that account, I'd be very grateful. But
I'll put it in the show notes, Kirk. I'll put it in the show notes. And are you still doing the podcast?
We are. Yeah. It's kind of taken a backseat to my work and my four kids and the club and the three teams that I coach there. And I'm like, you know, got to keep my wife happy. So like there's a lot going on. So we try to keep current with it, but it's often the last thing to be taken care of.
Got it.
That was called Counterpress, by the way.
Counterpress. It's still you and Daniel?
It is me and Daniel. Yeah. Josh was my original co-host. He moved to the Philippines and he just moved back. So we're trying to figure out a way to get him back in the mix, but yeah.
Got it. No, and I bring it up because usually I think it's good for parents or anybody to hear your voice, right? And have you flow with the topics. Because it gives them a sense of getting to know you, like you, and trust you, and then you know, good things come from that versus the written word or tweets or
sure
anything else. All right, man, cool.
Well,
thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
All right, brother.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches: you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.